From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 23rd day of June 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, the pork producers have asked US EPA to cut back the renewable fuels standard. And in a related note, predictions continue to call for cuts in the U.S. livestock numbers. We'll have details of these stories later in the half hour. And then, as most farmers already know, the cool, wet weather has kept the insect world pretty quiet so far this year. But as you'll hear, it doesn't mean there aren't a few soybean aphids out there to watch. But not to spray, at least yet. Hey, and don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures like this July contract at $8.66 and a quarter for the soft red winter wheat, down a quarter. September unchanged at $8.84 and a quarter, and December wheat at $9.08, up three quarters. Kansas wheat settled at $9.04, down 11 for the day. July corn futures $7.24 and a quarter, up three. September at $7.38 and three quarters, three and a quarter higher, and December corn at $7.59 and a quarter, up three and three quarters. March contracts $7.74 and three quarters for 2009, up 4.5 cents. July soybean futures $15.15, the settlement price for the beans, down 17.5 for the nearby July. August at $15.17, down 18. September at $15.05, 10.5 lower. And your new crop November soybean settled at $15.02, 6.5 cents lower. July bean meal at $4.04, down 7.70. July bean oil at $63.27, down 61. CME Group live cattle June contract $96.65, $1.75 higher. The August down 15 at $104.70. August feeders at $113 and a nickel, 52.5 lower, and the SEPs at $114.42 and a half, 92.5 lower. July lean hog $76.25, down 92.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like for the afternoon. Crude oil futures at $136.40 a barrel, down a dollar, or rather up a dollar four at this hour. September futures at $137.80. They're 214 higher for the day. July ethanol at 285 and a tenth, that's down 1 7/10. The August futures at 288 even, down 4 cents for the day. Natural gas trading July at 1318 and 2 tenths, that's 18 and 8 tenths higher for the afternoon. And July heating oil trading at 379 and 9 one-hundredths. That's up 1 9/10 of a cent for the day. July propane futures, $1.87 and a half on the afternoon, up 1 1/10. And the gold futures trading the nearby June contract, $16.50 an ounce lower at $884.80. The Dow Jones Industrial Average on this Monday afternoon trading at 11,842 at this hour. That's just about a point lower for the day. The U.S. dollar at 73.46 is up 0.44, and the CRB index now stands at 455.01. That's down 0.37 for the afternoon. A flood warning is in effect for some rivers in northern, western, and southern Illinois, and in the far southwestern parts of Indiana. That, of course, until further notice. Our own meteorologist, Ed Kieser, says in eastern Indiana tonight, a few scattered showers should show up, a few thunderstorms early. Otherwise, it'll be partly cloudy. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy across the two-state region. Lows will range from 52 in northern Indiana to 62 in the southwestern parts of Illinois. Tomorrow in west central and southern Illinois and in the far southwestern part of Indiana, mostly cloudy skies, some showers, a few thunderstorms. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny. Highs tomorrow will range from 73 near Lake Michigan to 86 in the far south.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what's been happening across the landscape in the Midwest. Maybe we should start with the fundamentals of what crop might be there, what you think USDA's reports will show this afternoon, and if you dare a guess on the June 30th acreage report.
Well, as far as the conditions report, we are expecting 2 to 3% improvement as the trade as a whole. I think we're probably a little better than that, maybe 3 to 4% better in the good to excellent category. You go back 2 weeks ago, the stage the corn was in versus where it's at now. We're starting to see corn get into the nitrogen, and it's looking pretty good in some areas. Grant, there are the wet low-lying areas is still rough and ragged, but as a whole, if you take the average, we feel, you know, there's going to be some improvement. How much we'll see. As far as acreage lost, well, that's going to be a tough one because the jury's still out whether we receive more rain, whether or not we get in to see some replant or not. Our best guess is 1.5 to 2 million acres in corn, probably about 1 million acres of beans at the present moment. The thing is, though, Informa sort of stirred things up on Friday by projecting a higher corn planting on acreage. And how that stirs things up is if you lose 2 million acres of corn, you're subtracting them from a higher number versus a lower number. So it's going to be interesting to see what numbers come out this afternoon on the conditions and next week. But as far as total acreage, I think the USDA's or the reporting agencies are all sort of indicating we probably won't know until we get into the August report.
Some producers, I think, and you probably heard this last week, were a little fearful that the drop, a couple of days were pretty hard down last week, and then, of course, there was a close on a settlement price from week to week that was lower across the grains floor. Scared them, I think, a little bit. Any reason to be scared, and really how big a drop was that when you take a look at it in terms of percentages?
Well, when you look at the technical picture, for say, we did have some reversal action down. Also, too, we saw a drop in the open interest by 55,000 contracts in the corn and 19,000 contracts in the beans. And so there's reason to believe if you're a technical trader and follow the momentum indicators, the stochastics and momentum indicators turn down, it does suggest that there's a top in place until we get some type of sizable correction here to alleviate the overbought status. Because if you go back to the 1st of June, we were virtually at $6. We topped out here just above $7.90, so that's $1.90 up for the month of June there. And that's a fairly huge move. Now, the fear is if we put in a technical top and correct, if you correct 50% of that move, you could go back to $7 in a hurry. So there is downside risk as a producer. And as a trader, we've got some sell signals on these momentum indicators. We've not gone down below the longer-term moving averages, the 40, 50-day by all means, but it does suggest that we could break. As far as percentage, boy, I mean, when you talk $7, it's a pretty big percentage when we talk big numbers here.
All right. So what do you tell producers then? And let's say they're 30% sold or were 30% sold on what their expectation for the crop is, and you'll have to adjust that just a bit on whether they've lost any crop to the waters and rainfalls or not. But let's just make it they're 30% sold at this time. Do they do anything else? Corn and beans both.
Well, we feel as cash sellers, we need to be 50% sold.
Okay.
On a good average yield. You know, these are historically high prices, and if you figure the higher input costs we incurred here to put this crop in the ground, and the current price you can receive is still a huge return. Then on the remaining 50%, we recommend put options still. We've recommended those from day one, and we feel that's the best way to go. We've given up some value inputs, of course, and God guys, you know, can see that, but we've gained anywhere from $1 to $2 in the corn and $2 to $4 in the beans. So I think that's well worth the risk reward. By buying a put option here, if that does not work, that means corn's going to stay up here in the upper $6 level and these beans, you know, in the upper $14 level. And I'd be willing to trade 10 to 15 to 30 cents to guarantee or have me in a position to make that kind of returns on what I've gotten out in the field here, Todd.
How many people you think will have to do a lot of catch-up sales to get to 50%? Most of them?
It varies a lot. You know, we've seen cases where guys have been fairly aggressive, selling the rally all the way up. Then we've got guys that haven't sold a bushel yet, so it varies a lot. Two, it depends location. If you take the northern central part of the states here, you know, guys have been fairly aggressive, but you take the southern or where there's been a lot of water, you know, they've really quit selling because they just don't know where they're at. So it varies tremendously from location to location. And that's what a lot of the analysts do here on the radio is work with individuals here and sort of do an individual plan according to your own situation.
Let's do a little individual on your livestock. You're talking to a livestock producer now. Doesn't run a lot of livestock, either hogs or cattle, either one, but it's going to need grain. What do you do for them?
At this point, about the only thing you could do is do some type of option strategy in the corn, do a bull call spread in case corn runs another $1, $1.50 higher. On meal, if December meal goes above $400 and stays above it, you got to go ahead and book another couple loads of meal here to cover that. Meal is probably the most bullish commodity on the board right now in the grain sector. It's been getting the short side, so it's the one to go. But otherwise, we feel basis-wise, you need to start booking cash corn here in the next 2 to 3 weeks. The idea basis will firm up as we go into this fall.
Thanks much, Kurt.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Monday afternoons.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In today's agricultural news, the pork producers are backing a waiver of the RFS. Today, the National Pork Producers Council will ask that the federally mandated target for corn-based ethanol production be cut in half. In comments to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, NPPC will urge that the state of Texas be granted a waiver of the renewable fuel standard and that the amount of biofuels to be produced in 2008 be reduced to 4.5 billion gallons from 9 billion gallons. EPA has until the 24th of July to make a decision on that waiver. NPPC says pork producers have been feeling the pinch of higher prices per feed, which accounts for 70% of the cost of raising the hog. Feed grain prices started to increase during the summer of 2006. On another livestock note, the cutback in meat production is expected to continue. Seaboard Foods CEO Rob Brenneman says a sow slaughter will continue, and there will be fewer hogs and less pork in the marketplace later this year. Cutbacks are expected in the beef and poultry sectors as well. Brenneman blames the current renewable fuel standards for the high feed prices, calling it a classic case of unintended consequences. Mark Hickman, who's the chair of the National Chicken Council, says the poultry industry is entering phase two of production cutbacks. A 2% cutback has already occurred, and Paul Hill, chairman of the National Turkey Foundation and Federation, expects a 10 to 15% cutback in production on the nation's turkey herd this year. We'll switch now to beef production. Agreement between the United States and the South Korean government permits that country to introduce a special age verification program for shipments. This program will ban imports of American beef from cattle older than 30 months. The ban is expected to last until the public concern in South Korea on the safety of U.S. beef subsides. If you're personally looking for a way to help out Midwestern farmers suffering from the recent floodwaters, you can donate to FarmAid. After some extensive deliberations, Joanne Birkenkamp, Program Director for Local Foods at the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy in Minneapolis, reports the organization has reached the decision that Sow the Seeds will not attempt to relaunch a flood relief effort, but support FarmAid instead. FarmAid is collecting donations for farmers in the 9-state region affected by the June floods. FarmAid also has a fund specifically for farmers in Iowa. Ted Kaday of FarmAid says every dollar received for disaster assistance is channeled in full to organizations working locally, who then disperse those funds to area farmers. And finally today, another soybean rust case has been confirmed. Officials are ready to confirm soybean rust in Taylor County, Florida. The USDA soybean rust website says prior to this instance, the most recent detection was on kudzu in Leon County, Florida on June the 9th. Since the beginning of 2008, soybean rust has been reported on kudzu in one county in Alabama, 10 counties in Florida, 3 counties in Louisiana, and 1 county in Mississippi, along with 3 counties in Texas. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Listening to the Closing Market Report from Public Radio on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, the State of Illinois' land-grant institution. Don't forget to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Now up next, cool, wet weather usually puts insects on hold, and certainly that's good news for farmers throughout the Midwest, although it may be little consolation. Insects are cold-blooded creatures, or at least their life cycles are oftentimes directly related to temperature. People like entomologists use the accumulated growing degree days to predict when insects will reach a life cycle that can, for instance, damage a crop. The cool, wet weather this spring has slowed everything down. And that is at least a little good news for farmers battling too much spring rainfall, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Kevin Steffi.
That having been said, it has been so wet this year and slowed down insect growth so much that, to be real honest, with the exception of some early calls on black cutworms because of the late planting, there hasn't been much insect activity. It's probably safe to guess that the excess water has probably been detrimental to a lot of the insects that might otherwise have been a problem.
True, but when fields are wet and, as Steffi says, it takes a John boat or a canoe to get through them, there isn't much reason for people to look for insects in the nation's corn and soybean fields.
But quite honestly, even those who have been out to look aren't finding very much. There are all sorts of potential things to come, possibly, in the insect world, but the only thing of note recently that we've found is Russ Higgins, an extension educator in the Will County area, found soybean aphids, believe it or not, on volunteer soybean plants in a cornfield.
That find was made Friday, June 13th, and tells Steffi the aphid is making the flight from its overwintering haven in buckthorn to the soybean. But how that delayed transfer will affect soybean aphid populations during the summer months is simply uncharted territory, and has been a topic of considerable contemplation for Steffi.
Absolutely. Let's use soybean aphids as a really good example. As I indicated, we're in uncharted territory because since the soybean aphid has arrived, we haven't had a year like this. 2008, well, the soybean aphid was discovered in 2000. We've had nothing like 2008 until now. So we're going to find out what effects that this weather may have had on soybean aphids, but one speculation is with fewer soybean fields to choose from, so to speak, they may concentrate more in isolated fields.
This concern, coupled with what Steffi calls ideal weather conditions, cool and dry the third full week of June in central Illinois, should put farmers on alert for aphids. This is the point at which Kevin Steffi crunches his face up just a bit. Sometimes He gets a phone call asking if it might be okay to throw a little insecticide in with that glyphosate just to hold off the aphid and maybe the two-spotted spider mite. That's when he might say something like, "Dude, the answer is no." There are extraordinarily good reasons for farmers not to tank mix an insecticide with Roundup or any other glyphosate if the insect pests are not present within economically damaging parameters. First and foremost, the insecticide will kill the good insects that could keep the bad ones from developing. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Joining us now on the Closing Market Report for our Monday afternoon look at the cash grain market is Carolyn White of the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Carolyn.
Actually, it's Brian filling in for Carolyn. God, I pull a switcheroo on you. Anyway, we're on the air and ready to go.
Oh, that's okay. How are you today, Mr. Stark?
Doing well.
All
doing
right.
Well.
Brian Stark with us this afternoon. That's perfectly fine. Brian, when farmers were calling in today, what were they asking you to begin with?
Well, they weren't, Todd. to be honest, it was very quiet today. Most farmers are taking advantage once again of the drier weather we're seeing the first couple days this week to spray, replant, be in the field, and get things into the ground and wrapped up before we see our next chance of rain, which I think is Wednesday through Saturday, a little bit every day. So phones are very quiet. I think right now they're just kind of trying to get their ducks in a row and hopefully see some good progress, warm sunshine to get this crop going, and then they'll probably reevaluate, you know, where this marketplace is going to go here soon.
I spoke to my nephew this morning over on the family farm in Logan County, which apparently is the garden spot of the Midwest at this point, said the crops just look magnificent there after that kind of cool and dry week last week, could use a little bit more rainfall. Here I made note this morning on the way in from my hometown to Champaign that corn was actually starting to green up pretty good and looking pretty decent, but there are an awful lot of wet spots here in East Central Illinois.
Awful lot of wet spots, and I think it's going to take a while to quantify what type of impact we've seen. I think if you kind of get an average yield the last 5 years and this our draw territory, you know, 30 miles either direction, we're probably looking at 180 corn, and I think right now the most people you talk to would probably put their guesses if everything is perfect from here on out in the 160 camp. So I think it's going to be tough to gauge, you know, what this wet spring actually does impact us, but things are starting to look a little bit better. We've stopped the bleeding. Ratings should improve a little bit today, but we all know that the corn crop's made in July, so we're still going to need to ask for that massive amount of rain, or not massive, but the rain we've had in the spring, but we're going to need more of it here in July when we pollinate.
And very quickly, 45 seconds left. A little bit earlier, Kurt Kimmel told us if you're not up to 50% sold, you ought to get there. You agree with that?
I would say so. At least 40%, maybe not 50, but I think the producers should be taking advantage of these prices.
And bids for the day?
$6.99 cash corn, fall corn $7.19, cash soybeans $14.97, fall beans $14.22.
Thanks much, Brian.
Thanks, Todd.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Joins us on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Monday afternoons. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago.
An unwanted car that's given you years of good service can do one final good deed. Donating it to WILL through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program will help pay for your favorite WILL programs. To learn more, go to willpledge.org and click on Donate Your Car. Thanks.
It's National Pecan Sandy Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1857, William Kelly is issued a U.S. patent for manufacturing of iron and steel. He invented the air blast method of forming steel from iron. His initial goal was to reduce the amount of fuel required for iron and steel making because of the immense amount of timber required to make the charcoal. But Kelly saw little financial gain from his idea. He went bankrupt in 1857 and was forced to sell his patent. In 1868, Christopher Nathan Scholes of Wisconsin patented a mechanical writing machine called a typewriter. It was as large as a desk made of black walnut and had black and white keys. He signed a deal with the Remington Arms Company for its manufacture in 1873. It was Remington who turned it into a more practical machine. In 1937, Nicholas Shackleton was born, an English geologist. He helped identify carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas by demonstrating that the fall of the ice ages was linked to decreases in atmospheric carbon dioxide. He also warned that excessive emissions of carbon dioxide could lead to global warming. By the way, during his lifetime, he amassed the world's largest collection of clarinets. And in 1982, a record low temperature of -1.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Marker Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. On the line with us this afternoon to take a look at the key weather market is Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I said weather market. Are we trading anything?
Well, it seems come apparent that the kind of drama of late here in the Midwest has eased, and we've gotten into more of a quiet time across the region. Obviously, from a pattern standpoint, things have become pretty quiet here in the lack of widespread significant rainfall over the past week's time frame. And while the pattern here coming up for the next week is going to feature, you know, rain activity and a generally unsettled pattern, we really don't see any of the widespread heavy nature of rain, such as what we saw back a few weeks ago across areas of the Midwest. And looking out further into the early portion of July, we feel that that rain activity will shift northward, and as a result, the southern areas of the Midwest will get into a drier pattern.
What we'd really like is about an inch, I think, every week or so from now until, well, mid-August, or at least in that time frame. You can't promise that, can you?
Well, it seems like those inches all came in the span of about 2-3 weeks here back late in May and early portion of June. And at least going forward here, this week is normal to what are the normal week across the Midwest. So some areas will get their inch or even slightly more. As we go into week two, though, for next week, it looks like the northern areas of the Midwest, by northern areas, I mean areas along and north of I-80. That's the focus of rainfall next week, whereas the drier areas then are concentrated south of I-80.
Can you talk a little bit about weather for hard red winter wheat harvest?
Yeah, well, certainly it's been on the slow side here from a harvest standpoint due to the very active conditions across the plains. And back, you know, last week as the Midwest turned inactive, the plains turned active, not coincidentally here. And we've seen widespread rains. That now is ending, Todd, as the pattern is becoming less active across the plains. And as a result here, we should see improvement in harvest conditions as we progress through the week.
Let's stay with wheat very quickly. Tell me about the Ukraine and Indian wheat crops.
Well, first of all, for Ukraine, as they cut wheat in that portion of the hemisphere, overall they had a very, very good season, adequate soil moisture reserves throughout the vast majority of the season, a lack of winter kill, lack really of any kind of issue, so it looks like they're going to have a very good crop. For India, also, they're done harvesting, and overall they had a decent crop, although there were some dryness concerns earlier in the season, back last fall when they had an early retreat of the monsoon, and some dryness over their winter, but overall, because of the increase in planted acreage, actually they had another big crop out of India.
And China has a corn crop in the ground.
Yeah, and overall it's faring very, very well across much of China, and we expect that to continue for the most part over the next couple weeks. Just the one area that we're paying a little bit closer attention to is Heilongjiang province in far northern areas, actually the biggest soybean producer. That area is trending drier here, and so they will need rain over the next few weeks, or else that will become a more significant issue.
Mark, we'll talk to you next Monday.
Okay, Todd.
Thanks much. That's Mark Russo with Chesapeake Energy. He's in Chicago, Illinois, in the Boeing building, in fact. I think he's up on the 22nd floor, where today it is a beautiful day and the skies are blue with a few clouds. Well, there's been rainfall in the past. Mark will talk to us again next week. You've been listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a great afternoon.